listening to the only daily talk show in North America covering the world of football. This is World Football Daily.
Yes, 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 yes! It hits the back of the net! Oh my goodness me!
The world's game.
Oh, you're beautiful! What a head, son! What a head!
Our religion.
Brilliant goal! What an equalizer!
Our passion.
Go, go, USA! Oh, it's incredible! You could not write a script like this!
World Football Daily serves up the best football talk 5 days a week.
Oh! You will never, ever see a game quite like this! Unbelievable!
Misery for Moyes, but splendour for Sunderland as the Black Cats get a 2-1 loss, but go through on penalties at Old Trafford. But with 3 scored in 10, was that the worst penalty shootout that you've ever seen in your life? AC Milan's troubles continue as Balotelli gives the Rossoneri the lead against Udinese in the Coppa Italia, but the fall short once again as Seedorf's dream start comes to a very quick end. And at 1-0 at half-time, Barca could have been shaking away from home against Levante, but Messi, in his 400th appearance for the club, is able to guide them back, along with a Teo hat-trick, to a 4-1 win in Copa del Rey action. Welcome to World Football Daily today. I'm Oliver the Juice Wilson, bringing you the news and the many views from around the world of football. In case you missed it yesterday, Juan Mata, pending a medical, is all set and ready to join Manchester United. Is this the saving grace that Manchester United need? The saviour that Moyes can bring in to revive his team as they go on to look for European qualification this season? Because it's not coming in the League Cup. That's right. Last night, Sunderland, over two legs, were able to get the better of Manchester United. Who would have thought we'd ever hear that or be seeing that when it was never in doubt when Alex Ferguson was there? Two legs against Sunderland, surely that's a Manchester United win. It doesn't really matter the side that he puts out, and especially the way, the manner in which his side cracked under the pressure of the penalty shootout. I'm sure ex-United players Wes Brown and John O'Shea were having a good old chuckle in the away dressing room in Old Trafford last night. But I want to start the show today properly and get deep into Barcelona from last night in the Copa del Rey. While Lionel Messi made his 400th appearance and put on a stellar show, you have to say, with his assists for Teo as they grabbed what became almost an inevitable victory in the Copa del Rey last night. Levante, who drew with Barca on the weekend, held them and looked good in that opening 45 minutes, but they had to work oh so hard to get that one goal lead. And when they when the own goal went in just after half time, you kind of felt that their shell, their protective shell that they put up, was just going to start crumbling around them. And so it did. Julie noted that the performance of Levante dropped off incredibly in that second half, while Lionel Messi and co started to walk their way through this Levante side. Teo will be taking the praise, of course, but a lot of people looking back at Lionel Messi and his incredible 400th game. It almost summarizes, doesn't it, his impact on Barcelona. 400 games, and they relied on Messi to dig them out of a hole. Now, I'm not saying this is a poor Barca side. I would never go as far as saying that. Compared to sides that we have seen from Barca, sure, it's not playing the same kind of dominant style of football as we would have liked to have seen maybe 3-4 years ago, but it's still an impressive side and one that has to be considered worthy of Champions League football. But the fact that they did have to look and rely on Messi once again to drag them kicking and screaming out of that kind of hole that they found themselves in against Levante, I think just shows how important he is to this side. And it raises the question, what happens if there is if something happens to Lionel Messi at Barca, what does this side do? There are plenty of problems, including the breaking story, actually, from the last few hours or so, that an emergency special meeting at Barcelona has seen Sandro Rosell hand in his resignation as the president of the club today. A massive, massive decision with these legal proceedings taking place of the Neymar transfer that we were talking about yesterday, getting the facts out to you about all these extra sums that continue to be flying around the papers of the Spanish press, that Barcelona deny that has been paid. But Sandro Rosell has handed his resignation, an emergency board meeting today of the club's vice presidents has seen that take place. And it puts Barcelona in a very difficult predicament because, you know, I don't want to, you know, breach of contempt of court, sorry, but it doesn't look good, does it, for Rosell to be resigning with all of this flying around. Barca aren't playing the greatest football. They're not running away with the title at the moment. There's all of this stuff going on about Neymar. And then for Rosell to hand in his resignation in an emergency meeting, you know, there's no smoke without fire, to put it that way. But at the same time, obviously innocent until proven guilty, but FC Barcelona as a football club. But it just doesn't look great, as I say, on the side to have all of this controversy kicking around them. And what you wonder what would happen, as I say, if something happened to Lionel Messi. We've already seen him pick up a couple of injuries in the last season and a half or so. And if he did leave the club, if the worst came to the worst, and this had a big impact on Barca as a club, the repercussions of this lawsuit kind of fall on the club. Something has to be done, maybe a massive fine of some sort, or I don't know, ban from competitions or whatever the case will be. We've been trying to get a Spanish football expert, sorry, all day today to talk about this, and this unfortunately we've run out of people because everybody has been called to rediscuss this Sandro Rosell resignation. So we will have to wait for hopefully tomorrow to try and get a Spanish journalist to come and have a chat with us about this on World Football Daily. But as I say, it doesn't look great, and life without Messi, as there was all those kind of Ibrahimovic talking about, let Messi should come to PSG, and PSG toying in the papers with the idea of trying to bring in Messi. This Barca side without Lionel Messi at this point in time could be a catastrophic affair. Neymar out as well, of course, with his injury. If Messi were to fall or go this January, it's extremely unlikely. But it does just make you wonder where this Barca side would be without their star man or star men. Of course, as I say, with Neymar out on the sidelines at the moment. But Sandro Rosell resigning in the last hour or so here on World Football Daily, an absolutely massive story. Josep Maria Bartomeu will take over until the end of the season, when early elections will be held. We'll be trying to track down some more on that story later on in the next few days. But in general, what do you think about Barcelona and this Neymar kind of saga? Do you think there's no smoke without fire? This net amount that Neymar's meant to inherit in overall of this deal, in Neymar and his family and his parents' company, 105.1 million euros. Does it all seem fishy to you? Let us know. Show at worldfootballdaily.com, at WFootballDaily on Twitter, 310-909-8483 is the rant line, and of course the Facebook page as well. But they are in the dominant position in the Copa del Rey against Levante with that 4-1 win on the road last night. Your favourite Lionel Messi moments? That's one thing I want to ask you guys as well. What is that picture perfect moment for you with Lionel Messi? I think one of them for me is the Champions League final header against Manchester United in the Estadio Olimpico, because to me that is one of the most difficult headers that I've ever seen. The fact that somebody so small jumped so high, arching backwards, pinging that ball back into that far top corner, that is one of the best headers you will ever see in your life. And for a player that is so gifted with the ball at his feet on the ground, for Lionel Messi to pull off something like that is just absolutely fantastic, and still a memory that sticks out in the mind when you think about Messi and his incredible performances. There is also, of course, that incredible night against Arsenal in the Camp Nou, when Lionel Messi scored four past Arsenal. That's not because of my dislike of Arsenal or anything like that. But it was more the way in which Messi just took that game and by the scruff of the neck and made it his. Level 2-2 after the first leg, and then for Bentner to give Arsenal the lead so early on. And then, unfortunately for them, it all just came collapsing around them oh so quickly. Messi's quadruple, including that delightful chip that saw him destroy Arsenal's Champions League dreams for yet another season. Those two, I think, are the two memories. And they do stand out, I think, because they're against English clubs. Just for me personally, I'd love to know your favourite Lionel Messi moments. There's 400 games to pick from. Let us know. Show at worldfootballdaily.com, at WFootballDaily on Twitter. 310-909-8483 is the rant line. And, of course, there is the Facebook page as well. Big news out of France from last night also. We will touch on Falcao actually now, because could be a disaster for Falcao as he's injured last night in Monaco's Coupe de France clash. So I'm going to talk with Rafa a little bit about that when he joins me on the show in a few minutes' time, because I question the decision to play Falcao against a side from France's fourth division. It doesn't make any sense when you're Monaco, when you should be destroying sides from this sort of level in France, in French football. What is the point in playing somebody like Radamel Falcao and risking this sort of thing taking place? A knee injury to Falcao could be an end to his season, possibly to the World Cup as well. But it was a Cinderella story once again for PSG, against PSG for Montpellier last night. The side that pipped PSG to the title, the French title 2 years ago, getting one over on the Parisian giants once again. Congre and Montano giving the wayside last night a 2-1 win. Edson Cavani providing a goal in 30 minutes. Did PSG go out without enough joie de vivre, should we say, without enough intensity? They play Pastore, Verratti, Menez, Matuidi, Marquinhos, Lucas, Cavani, De Ville, Thiago Silva, Digne. No Sirigu, though, in the starting lineup. No Ibrahimovic either. No Motta, although Ibrahimovic and Motta did come off the bench for that game last night. After 66 minutes, Ibrahimovic came on, but still couldn't make the big impact that was needed. Montpellier, on the other hand, a fantastic win for them. And really, they are a side that have been struggling so much this season. We were talking about it earlier on in the week with Robin Berner. You can listen back to that on show at worldfootballdaily.com. Almost gave you the email address there. worldfootballdaily.com. Sign up, become a member, and you can listen back to our interviews from the last few weeks or so here on the show. And Robin Berner was telling us that he doesn't believe Montpellier will get pulled into the relegation battle, but in 16th at the moment, 4 points adrift of Valenciennes, in 18th in that first relegation spot. It's not pretty for a side that were Ligue 1 champions just 2 years ago. But fantastic win for them, and it does bring through that magic of the cup we were talking about with our man John Johnson, the voice of PSG football TV, that is PSG TV, and just a great moment of cup magic, as I say, from the Coupe de France, that gives us all a little bit of hope. You know, Monaco without Falcao, they're not a weak side. They are probably still the strongest side in that tournament, but they are weakened heavily by that. And it means that we're going to have, more than likely, a real battle of two teams that, were this in England, you wouldn't expect maybe two mid-table teams to be in the FA Cup final or the League Cup final. And at the moment, we still don't have that, with Manchester City meeting Sunderland in the Capital One Cup final come the end of February. But it is happening in France. No PSG, and Monaco could easily be knocked out without the services of Falcao, especially if they get complacent. Cup magic, love it or hate it, let us know. Show at worldfootballdaily.com, at WFootballDaily on Twitter. Were you hoping for a PSG-Monaco Coupe de France final, or are you glad that one of the big giants of French football is out? We're going to talk a little bit of Coppa Italia a little later on. I'm going to try and delay that as much as possible because, you know, it's tough for me with Milan losing, and we'll get into it. I'm sure Rafa will want to try and bring it up
at some point, that's for sure. We also need to talk about last night's game, Sunderland against Manchester United, and how boring Manchester United were. Have they become a boring side to watch? I still maintain they have. And there's no better person to join me, as he does every day on World Football Daily, to give us a little bit of football chat. And once again, I do apologise for the lack of a footballing expert. You're going to have to deal with myself and Rafa just mixing it up for today here on Thursday's edition of WFD. But joining me, as always, is Rafa Gonzalez. Rafman, how are we on this fine Thursday? I'm sure you're enjoying the sun out in California, mate. How are we keeping?
No sunshine yet here. It's still technically considered winter here. I know it feels like summer sometimes, but it's winter time, so the days are shorter, which means we don't get sunrise till about 6:45 maybe, juice. So it's fine. I can handle it. I like the dark. And in general, I do my best work at the odd hours of the day. So let's do this, man. I'm ready to talk. Like, where do you want to go to first?
Well, Jeez. I want to talk about
the first American going to, or not the first American, but another American going to play in the FA Cup final.
Yeah, I guess.
Or the League Cup final. I'm sorry.
If you want to start with Jose Altidore, the man that. I mean, I really like Josie, and I rate him very highly on the US stage. But for
you
some
rate
reason,
better than me, that's for sure.
But for some reason, he continues this year to do nothing for Sunderland.
Absolutely nothing.
And I find it so frustrating that a guy who plays great football for the US men's national team struggles so much to make an impact on a Sunderland side that is by no means above his playing style and playing quality. And it's not like he's been thrown in at the deep end and can't handle it. He should be able to play football in that Sunderland side and play in the Premier League. Maybe, you know, he's not going to dominate the greatest teams in that Premier League. He's not going to be, you know, slicing apart the Man City back four and tearing his way through Chelsea's defensive line. Although, you know, he should be doing a little bit more against Manchester United, that's for sure. Because, as I say, we are treating them as a mid-table, mediocre side these days on World Football Daily, because that's what they are. But I do think Josie's just underperforming this season so much. And I've been trying to back him all year. I've been saying, yeah, no, he'll come good, he'll come good. And it's still not happening yet. I mean, his impact yesterday on the game was just minimal. And it must be frustrating for him as well, because he must realise that he's done, to put to one of a better term, shaggle to make an impact on this Sunderland team at the moment. And considering he is, as I say, such a big player in the US men's national team, such a focal point of their attack, for him to be doing such little kind of impactful play in the Sunderland side, it's got to be kind of disheartening and pretty humiliating for Josie. After, you know, he banged in 23 goals last year, and the only goal he scored at the moment is one league goal in the Premier League against Chelsea, and one league goal in the League Cup against MK Dons. And you know, that's coming off, what are we talking here, like 25 odd appearances this season so far. It's not good enough, Josie. You've got to be up in your game, but you are off to Wembley, and that's obviously pretty spectacular. Have you seen 10 penalties, 3 of them go in? What?
Well, I mean, I guess that's pretty par for the course. It is England. I mean, granted, there are some, you know, quite a few international players.
Here we go.
Rosters,
all right,
but
I've been waiting for this.
It is England, and
four English players miss penalties. Yeah, 4 of 4. Scotsman scores one. I mean, it's just embarrassing, isn't it?
It is, absolutely. No, actually, one of the things that I was kind of wondering, and I don't know what it is, but can you explain to me, Juice, why it is that Javier Hernandez cannot score in kind of regular time? You know what I mean? Like, what is it about Javier Hernandez that he has to save it for the very, very last minute?
Or for Hernandez, United are trailing, so he decides to score as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, when they need a goal, Hernandez pops up. But when they could do with just, you know, taking a 2-0 lead or going one up after half an hour, you know, where's Hernandez then? It's always the dramatic with him, isn't it? You get a feeling that he's got a penchant for the dramatic and loves the drama at the end of games. I don't know what it is. I mean, he did his best to miss it. Let's be fair. He did his very best to miss it, in the same way that David De Gea did his very best to make a routine save look disastrous And fair play to David De Gea, because he pulled that one off extremely well. If you want to make yourself look like a grade A fool in the League Cup semi-final, that was the way to do it. Bardsley's strike was straight at him. And it's not like it's a bobbly pitch at Old Trafford or anything like that. There are no excuses for De Gea. What was quite funny, actually, was a friend of mine was saying over Twitter on the weekend during the Chelsea-Manchester United game. He said, how many of these Arsenal players would go into this team? How many of these Manchester United players would go into Arsenal's team? I don't think any of them would. He said Januzaj would be the only player from that side that played against Chelsea to get into Arsenal's team. And I said, what about David De Gea? Because, you know, there's all the talk about Szczesny not being good enough for the last 18 months or so. He's come good this season, of course, but De Gea's obviously upped his game as well. And I kid you not, 20 seconds in after that ball being spooled over the line last night, I got a tweet from him just saying, definitely not. It was almost like he'd had this one saved in his drafts, knowing that David De Gea was going to make a mistake in the next few days or something like that. It was just perfect. I mean, the group of people I was watching it with last night, we were all sat about wetting ourselves with laughter of that. But it was just so quick and perfect timing of him just saying, definitely not. And I think you can only agree with him on that performance from De Gea last night. Phil Bardsley's strike, as I say, straight at him. And the other thing was, we're discussing this, about Bardsley crops up with goals every so often, doesn't he? He is the kind of player that Sunderland can bring on, and he ends up pulling something out of the bag every so often. No surprise then that Bardsley then went and cracked a strike on goal from the edge of the 18-yard box, looked to be sending Sunderland through, and then Hernandez, just minutes later, scooping his strike into the roof of the net to save the embarrassment for David Moyes for at least another kind of 20 minutes or so after the penalty shootout. And the embarrassment did just continue there from United. I was waiting for somebody to write something about, oh, United used to train on penalties more when Ferguson was about, and to start putting the blame on Moyes again. Look, you can talk about, and there's plenty of talk about Moyes, you know, maybe lacking that leadership, lacking the kind of mental fortitude to get this group of players
professional footballer, Juice, and you can't hit a penalty, what are you doing playing at the top level?
Well,
I mean, it's for me, it's very much like basketball. I hate the idea of quote unquote big men who cannot shoot a free throw.
There's
nobody in your face, Juice, and you have nothing to do but just shoot at the basket, unguarded. You should be able to knock that down. I mean, and basketball, because it's a smaller, you know, goal, I would give it maybe. I made myself shoot over 75% in high school. So, I mean, if I was a professional, you know, basketball player, I would shoot well over 80% in free throws. I guarantee it. And I mean, I know for a fact that I'm not the best penalty taker, so I'm not going to step up and take a penalty unless we do go into penalty shootouts. And when we do go into penalty shootouts, all I know is that I'm going to put as much kind of power as I can while keeping it down and trying to slam it into a corner, because That's about as best as I can do. I am not a penalty taker. I am not a professional, but a professional should be putting it on goal and should be putting it away, because it's essentially a free throw, a free kick, a free shot.
You've got to put penalties on target. I mean, Phil Jones, for instance, his one. And if you actually notice, I saw this on the Football Ramble today. Phil Jones's penalty, when it goes way over that bar. I mean, we were having a pop at punching the other day, and that was a god awful penalty. That's the worst penalty. None of those misses last night competed with Jason Punchin's miss. But the fact that so many of them were so bad, like so bad. It was just ridiculous. I don't know, 12 yards out, it's not impossible to hit the target. At least Januzaj hit the target. Although for a keeper to be able to catch a penalty is embarrassing. It's embarrassing for him to be able to two-handedly pluck it out of the air and catch it. Shows how soft it was hit. Mm-hmm. I mean, Yakubu had a penalty, Blackburn against Liverpool. And Liverpool were down to their reserve keeper, Jones, in that game. And Yakubu struck a penalty that could have been a big saviour for Blackburn's season. And it was whilst I was in the States with you guys, actually, in April, I think, or March of 2012. And Yakubu strikes this penalty, and it just rolled almost straight into Jones's hands. And we were all saying that's the worst penalty we've ever seen. Now, Punchin probably outmatched that in terms of the worst miss. But Yanezai, for a penalty that hits the target, has outdone Yakubu's penalty last night. And it's a shame because he's such a hot prospect, such a good youngster to have coming through. Yet for him to have missed in a pretty depressing and demoralising way, I mean, it was like the ball just didn't want to go to the penalty, to pass the keeper and hit the back of the net. The ball looked depressed as he struck it. It was a shocker, absolute shocker. And the only saving grace was, for instance, almost every player that I wanted to miss a penalty. You know when you have kind of like irrational dislikes for people in football.
Sure, I have plenty of them.
I like Danny Welbeck. I wanted him to score, but I didn't think he'd score when he walked up. I said he'll miss. Craig Gardner. I said he'd miss, but I did say that De Gea would. I thought De Gea would save it. You know, after the mess up, I thought maybe De Gea would first penalty saves it, gives United the momentum. Stephen Fletcher, I said he'll miss, and I said I didn't want him to score because the other day a report came out that he'd. You know, you can get those bicycles in London and in big cities where you sit on the back and somebody pedals you around the city.
Right.
So Stephen Fletcher apparently was on one of these and took a video clip of him spitting on the back of the guy that was peddling them around London, which I just thought was, you know, disgusting. It's horrible.
Just went down in my book big time.
Despicable act. And for that, I was like, oh, I really hope he misses. Oh, I hope there's no glory for him. And what does he do? Goes and misses. Now, Darren Fletcher, Marcus Alonso, you know, have no problem with either of them. Both, you know, players that don't really crop up on my radar too much in terms of that like-dislike role. I said Yanezai would miss. I was like, youngster, yeah, I bet he misses. Ki Sung-yong, again, you know, doesn't really crop up on the radar of like or dislike, so I said he'd miss. I said he'd score. And then Phil Jones stepped up. I said, bet he misses. Don't really like Adam Johnson because I think he's too selfish. He missed. And I just really wanted Raphael to miss. After that two-footed lunge on the weekend, I was really hoping that he just blazed it over. And thank you very much. I picked it. I picked the whole penalty shootout. I may have lost a £1 bet to my mate.
If only you could get kind of bonus points for, you know, IKTS somehow with that. Because, yeah, I mean, fair enough. You had it pretty darn close.
But it was like my karma, almost. My footballing karma controlled that. I was like, oh, I hope he misses. Oh, yeah, it's fantastic. Oh, yeah, I don't mind him. I hope Alonso puts it away. Yeah, oh, yes, he's done it. It was great. How much do you blame Moyes for it? Because United, I've said this for the last kind of 2 months now, United are boring to watch. They really are an uninspiring side to view. There's no set pattern to their play. There's no urgency. There's no energy about them. And the only time you really see that is Wayne Rooney when he's on the pitch. How much do you blame, though, for last night on David Moyes, and how much do you blame on the players? Because I wonder if, you know, it's the Capital One Cup. Teams like United generally don't treat it too seriously and don't care. And sure, they end up kind of waltzing their way through sometimes to an extent, but I mean, you look at the final last year, Swansea against Bradford. It shows that sometimes these teams that don't take it too seriously end up getting caught out and missing out on a piece of silverware. So it's no surprise that somebody like United aren't in the Capital One Cup final because they don't generally treat it seriously. Now, does that come into how a reason for United playing poorly last night, or do you put it on Moyes? And similarly with the penalty shootout, do you blame Moyes for a lack of mental fortitude in this United side, for not being able to get the result and do it in a high-pressure situation like penalties? Do you think if Ferguson had been on that bench and preparing them for that game, he'd have had those players more focused as they stepped up to take those penalties? I mean, I don't know about you. I don't imagine Moyes being a great leader going into that penalty shootout. But at the same time, I think it's very difficult for him to be a great leader at that point, at this moment in time, because he's getting so much criticism anyway. There's so many doubters around this club. If Moyes stepped into your huddle right now before a penalty shootout and said, "Come on, boys, we can do this," would you think that there's conviction behind it, or would you think that this is a desperate man trying to just rally spirits?
That's a very good question, Juice. I was kind of thinking about this yesterday a little bit. I was wondering whether or not, you know, Sir Alex would be able to kind of get this result. And to be honest, I mean, and considering it's essentially the same team, right? I've got to think that, you know, Manchester United and David Moyes were obviously under pressure yesterday. They were under a lot of pressure to kind of get through. And you almost feel like they can't handle this pressure because it's basically negative pressure. Now, when Sir Alex was at the helm, Juice, you almost felt like they were still under pressure. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like they would have been under pressure to win this game. And I think that Sir Alex would have been able to kind of get them up, understand that they're under pressure, and get that result. I think they would have been able to kind of hold off or more than likely come away with a 2-0 win if Sir Alex was coaching. Maybe even, you know, a 3-1 should Sunderland have scored. Just because that was a team that Sir Alex was capable of energizing and motivating. And for whatever reason, I feel like his players always played at their best, you know, raised their game to you know, to meet the challenges most times. And you know, I just don't. So I guess what I'm saying is that I do think that, you know, it does kind of fall on Moyes a little bit to me. I think that, you know, Moyes should have been able to translate that pressure, that energy, into success, basically. And there's the fact that, look, if you make the penalties under Sir Alex, every player looks at Sir Alex like that before he takes that penalty, and or knows that Sir Alex is burning a hole through his, you know, the back of his kit as he's walking up to take that penalty, because he's wanting that goal to go in. So,
but Sir Alex is there anyway. Sir Alex was in the stands watching.
Yeah, but he's not on the bench, and he's not going to be in the dressing room, and he's not going to be at training the next day.
To be honest, I'm waiting for that story to come out.
Yeah,
no, Sir Alex seriously. Goes into the dressing room.
Sir Alex comes to the training ground with his hairdryer in hand. You know, like
yeah.
I too am waiting for that as well, Juice. But so I don't think that they were under the same pressure or under the same motivation, I guess. And so, yeah, I do kind of put it on Moyes for the most part, because I've come to realize that this team isn't that great. And, you know, I think because it is essentially the same team that, you know, or that Ferguson had last year, you got to think that he was able to pull just a little bit more out of them, squeeze a little more talent, results maybe from this team. Whereas I think Moyes can't really do that. And it makes me wonder just a little bit, should Moyes kind of stay through summer and do everything that I've been saying, you know, get players in, bring players in. Are they going to listen to Moyes? Or, you know, I don't know if he is the answer, I guess. And this kind of, It does make me worry a little bit, because I feel bad. I would like to kind of pull for David Moyes. I would like to think that he could do this, but it's looking more and more like he can't. And
the trouble is as well that the more people start to back him and kind of say, "Oh no, he'll be fine. Moyes will get it eventually. Moyes will get it eventually." The more it seems to slip away. Like,
sure.
You know, everybody wants him to succeed, as you say. You know, I don't think there's anybody that's gunning for Moyes' head right now. There's nobody kind of saying, "Let's get him out. No, let's sort this out. He's got to go." You know, United fans are being patient. The press are being reasonably patient with him. They're saying it's, you know, getting tougher and tougher, and it's not getting any better. But nobody's called for his head yet. Which you imagine at Chelsea, for instance, I would imagine that David Moyes would have been dropped like a sack of bricks this Christmas already. So yeah. So everybody seems to be backing him and wanting him to do well. And it almost makes it harder to watch United suffering in this way, whether you're a United fan or not, because nobody's really got any beef with David Moyes. Everybody kind of likes him. You know, he's a good guy in football. And so to watch him struggling and failing with this job, and he is failing because it's a third cup competition if you include the in the Premier League that United aren't going to be winning this year. You know, all those eggs have to go into that Champions League basket now for a piece of silverware. Either that or they need to pull off the miracle comeback of miracle comebacks in the in a Premier League that's going to be, I'm sure, brought down to Manchester City and Chelsea come the end of the season. I just think it's so sad, and you just pity it, and I don't want to pity somebody like Moyes because, you know, that seems kind of patronising, but you do just feel sorry for him because he's looking pretty kind of lonely and downtrodden when he's sat in the dugout at Old Trafford. Fergie looking over him all the time and all this stuff. I mean,
It's a tough situation. It was always going to be a tough situation for anybody who was going to come in and replace Sir Alex Ferguson. But
he's got his man, though.
Yeah, I mean, they definitely got their man.
The number of tweets that came out after that loss last night of Juan Mata's turning round on the M1, Juan Mata's been arrested for doing a U-turn on the M6 as he makes his way up to Manchester, all this kind of thing. You know, I mean, you got to feel sorry for Juan Mata going into a United side that have hit a pretty much rock bottom. If you can't beat Sunderland over two legs as Manchester United, you are in a worrying position. Let's not beat around the bush. That is a sorry state of affairs for Manchester United to be in this season. And obviously sat seventh in the Premier League table doesn't help. Arsene Wenger's come out and said that this transfer move is unfair from Chelsea. Now, we know that Sir Alex Ferguson used to have this mentality of weaken your enemies, you know, buy your enemies' best players, make sure you weaken them by and also kind of improve your side at the same time, such as buying Robin Van Persie. Jose Mourinho and Chelsea have done a slightly different model, I think, with this Juan Mata move of, all right, play one of your enemies and then sell a player to that said enemy who's not going to impact on you so that he can then try and beat your other actual rivals for the title. I mean, Arsene Wenger's come out and said it's really unfair. If Juan Mata ends up, you know, bagging a couple of goals against Arsenal and a couple of goals against Man City, and those results end up turning the tide of the title run into Chelsea's favour, it's going to look like a genius piece of transfer business. Chelsea have sold a great player who's not really needed by their club to a team that will definitely be improved by him. And he could end up being a vital cog in Chelsea's title-winning year, if that's the case. If Mata puts in big performances against City, Arsenal, Liverpool and the like, it's going to be a big game-changer for the title run. Do you think, I mean, I have no doubt in my mind that this was in part Chelsea's reasoning to sell to Manchester United. They get a huge chunk of money. You know, 37-odd million pounds. Not bad. Nice little bit of money in the kitty. They get rid of a player that, you know, the Chelsea fans love and respect, but he's not playing in that Chelsea side. And if he's not going to be there, it's almost exactly what I want, rather than the hoarding of great players to stop other people having them. You know, move them on. Give us the chance to watch these great players play. And Juan Mata given a new lease of life up at Manchester United now. But also, it's genius if he can make an impact on the title run by helping United defeat some of Chelsea's title rivals.
It is. I mean, like, I understand where Arsene's coming from. You know, Juice, Jose himself has come out and said there's no chance of, you know, United coming back and winning this. It's, you know, they're essentially knocked out of the title chase. I understand it, but at the same time, it's just beyond petty. And I mean, that would, if I was an Arsenal player, I would be a little bit kind of shocked and a little bit kind of, you know, I would have a laugh at my manager. I mean, are you kidding me? Come on now. Like, don't start pointing at excuses before we even need them. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, I don't know. That's a bit ridiculous for me. It's one player. It's just Arsenal, get over it. You know, like, there's no such thing as fair, I guess. Or all's fair. Everybody knows all's fair in love and war. Might as well throw in football too, because I mean, it is war. It is it's love. So there's no such thing as fairness. Arsene, just get over yourself and just keep your team on track. That's what I would say.
Yeah, there's no need for him to start worrying about this. Well, there is probably a need to worry because he's going to have to face Juan Mata in a Manchester United shirt at some point this season. But in general, for him to come out and say it's unfair, Chelsea just playing the game. That's what they're doing. They're playing the game. And for Wenger to, you know, get his knickers in a twist about it, I think it's just a tad ridiculous on my part. To be said, yeah, I don't. No. Not having this arson. I've respected you this year for one of the first times, and I can't be respecting you much longer if you start coming out with things like that. There was plenty of other football last night. Touched on a little bit of it earlier. Raf Falcao is going to be going undertaking tests after suffering a pretty horrible injury last night against fourth tier French side Mons or Ezugiz. I hope I've got that right. Sonner Utek with the strong challenge on Falcao that has led to the Colombian possibly missing the remainder of Monaco's season and even the World Cup. A knee injury that, as I say, is going to be undertaking tests to see how bad the injury is, but some fearing that it could be a summer ender. Whether it is or not, playing Falcao in a Coupe de France match against a fourth tier side was, I mean, hindsight's a wonderful thing, but that's moronic, surely.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I understand the idea of like of showcasing, you know, your quote unquote franchise player, to use American terms.
Franchise players, man.
But it is kind of ridiculous. You'd like to think that Monaco should be able to kind of get through no problem. I think they went on to win that 3-0 or 3-1 or something like that.
3-0. Monaco cruising past Mons or Azeguz. 3-0.
So, yeah, you would like to think that it shouldn't have been an issue. But, I don't know. If I'm PSG, I'm excited that, you know, the title should be mine.
Pretty much. Although they can't be too excited after they lost 2-1 to Montpellier last night in the Coupe de France. Big loss for PSG. Although we were talking about that kind of cup magic that seems to be around in France. Bordeaux losing on penalties after a 0-0 draw against FA Lille Rosul. I'm terrible with these names. Lille Rosul, I believe, in Monticello. So losing out to them on penalties. Lyon getting through 3-1 last night, and Toulouse losing to Moulins as well. So some of the Ligue 1 sides not up to performance last night. And of course, fantastically, wasn't it brilliant? AC Milan, 7 minutes in, Mario Balotelli gives them a lead against Udinese. I'm sat with getting the live updates on my phone while I watch the Sunderland game. I'm getting a little bit excited, you know. A game changer, maybe. Oh, cup run. Wouldn't that be nice? Oh, wouldn't it be great going in a cup semi-final? You know, a chance to Coppa Italia final. Oh, that'd be such an just an uplifting boost for the side. And after Patrick yesterday got me all kind of, you know, excited about this AC Milan side once again, he gave it the vote of faith, the vote of confidence. You know, it's a better side than they're playing at the moment. Seydorf can come in and change and revamp things. It's such an emotional lift to the club. And then what happens? 41 minutes, Muriel scores a penalty, and then Lopez seals off a 2-1 Udinese win 12 minutes from time.
Yeah.
Cheers, Raf. Yeah.
Sorry.
No. Yeah. It's it just doesn't get any better for Rossoneri fans. How are we going to change things round?
You brought that up again today. You are like the self-deprecating kind of fan here.
Yeah, I know, but it's got to be talked about, and I've got to say, it's just money that we don't have needs to be spent, unfortunately. Hey, let's get some bank loans going. You know, former president of Italy, like,
you gotta think there's some sort of corrupt, moves to be made.
Stop putting, you know, $6 million a year into bunga bunga parties, Mr. Berlusconi, and start putting $18 million a year into the transfer kitty rather than having to sign, you know, Russian football rejects on free transfers. That is not derogatory to Honda, by the way, because I think he's going to be a cracking little purchase for Milan, that's for sure. But I don't agree with his. Oh, I think Champions League is what we need in Italy. It's like, yes, we do need that, but it's not going to happen. But yeah, how do we change AC Milan round? Who can Milan go and buy? Let us know. Show at worldfootballdaily.com, at WFootballDaily on Twitter. 310-909-84 is the rant line on the Facebook page as well. We spoke about Barcelona and Levante in the show a little earlier. Tello with his hat-trick, as I say. Lionel Messi back to his best in a second half dominated by Barca. I've been watching that today, and it was just, even knowing the score, you could see the inevitability of Barca taking that win. That's for sure. There is a little bit of football coming up tonight. The Tuscan Derby, as we were talking about yesterday with Patrick Kendrick. Remember, get on worldfootballdaily.com to listen back to that cracking interview with Patrick, making his first appearance on WFD and giving us the lowdown on Fiorentina against Siena. Atletico Madrid take on Bilbao tonight as well. That's definitely going to be worth a watch. And Auxerre meet Dijon, and Cannes take on Plab Beniac in the Coupe de France as well tonight. We know who is going to be in the Capital One Cup final. It's going to be Manchester City taking Sunderland. Would you have gone through all of that emotional roller coaster as a Sunderland player and as a Sunderland fan last night just to know that you're going to be able to get beaten on the biggest ground in England by Manchester City?
Beaten, quite possibly, like, pillaged, raped, abused.
Without sounding too harsh, but that is a game that could get very embarrassing. And there were some Manchester United fans actually saying last night that they would much rather have lost to Sunderland than have won just to be beaten by Manchester City at Wembley. I don't know how many Manchester United fans that kind of covers of their opinions and thoughts on last night's game. I'm pretty sure you wouldn't have wanted to to have lost to Sunderland last night. And one Manchester United fan called 999, the emergency services, last night, demanding to speak to Sir Alex Ferguson after the club's defeat to Sunderland. It's a crazy, crazy football time we're living in right now. Let us know your thoughts. Remember, show at worldfootballdaily.com, at WFootballDaily on Twitter. 310-909-843 is the rant line, the Facebook page as well. We've also got the Kickabout blogs on worldfootballdaily.com and the club podcasts available on iTunes and through the website. Premium members subscribe. It's such little money for such good football chat from all the club podcasts and from the main show here at World Football Daily. We'll be back at the same time tomorrow for Friday's show, including a bit of IKTS and a look ahead to some of the big games coming up this weekend. We'll catch you then. Take care. Enjoy the football.